It's all gift and grace. And sometimes the thing you're out there seeking is not the thing that you find. And can you receive that unique gift as what it is? So it really has taught me a lot about the goodness of God and about not trying to make those gifts what I've decided they need to be, but instead receiving the banquet that the Lord has set before me day in and day out.
Welcome to the Habit Podcast, conversations with writers about writing. I'm Jonathan Rogers, your host. Besides being a bird enthusiast, Courtney Ellis is a pastor, the author of several books, and the host of a podcast called The Thing with Feathers. Her new book is Looking Up, A Birder's Guide to Hope Through Grief. In this episode, Courtney and I talk about delight, presence, and cultivating attention. But mostly, we talk about birds. Courtney Ellis, I'm so glad to have you on the Habit Podcast. I'm excited about your new book, Looking Up, A Birder's Guide to Hope Through Grief. So thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
You, as I was telling you in our sort of before we started recording, I know this is, but you know, I know from the subtitle, you know, this is a book about grief and hope, but it's also, but it really is about birds. I always say, you know, the thing about, the thing you need to know about Moby Dick is it really is about whales. don't skip too quickly to, I don't know, predestination or revenge or whatever. Let's talk about whales for a minute. And so I don't want to skip too quickly past the birds. I want to talk about birds. So I figure you wouldn't mind doing that.
I will talk about birds with you all day long.
Let's talk about this idea of a spark bird. For you, your spark bird was a Phoebe of some kind. So tell me what you mean by, I know you, that idea didn't originate with you. Tell me about what a spark bird is, and I'd love to hear about your experience of getting sparked up by a bird.
Yeah, it's a term from the bird watching, the birding community. The spark bird is the first bird that really piques your interest, that really grabs you. And I think if you're not a birder, you can think of the first thing that grabbed you in something that you love. You know, what was it that drew you into writing, or what was it that drew you into, you know, playing the mandolin? What was it that grabbed you? And for me, it was a black Phoebe, which is a Western species of flycatcher. And we had a friend over who pointed out in my backyard and said, "Hey, you have a Phoebe." And I said, "I have a what now?" When I hear Phoebe, I think about the sitcom Friends. Like, I don't think about bird. I didn't know what it was. And it was fascinating to me that there was this bird in my backyard. I'd never noticed before. It had been there for a while. It was common to my area. And it drew me into this world of what else haven't I noticed? Yeah. And that was the start of me becoming an obsessive newbie birder. I'm not an expert, but I'm definitely an enthusiast. And there's something, I love the word spark when we talk about spark bird, because that's really what it felt like internally. It was this jump into delight and wonder and questions and excitement. And that was what started the ball rolling for me. And now I'm at this place in my life where it's all birds all the time when I'm not working as a pastor or serving as a parent. And my poor husband, who says, "You were not like this when I married you." Yeah, right. We go out on dates and he says, "Courtney, two bird facts, and I will listen, and I love you, and then we're moving on." Like, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. Birds are great.
Yeah, they are great. It's, I don't know how we get used to the fact that these things in our yard can just flap wings and just soar up into the air like angels.
It's tremendous. It's amazing. And once you start looking, no matter where you live, you'll be amazed at how many species of birds there are that you never paid attention to. You know, we see the gulls and we see the pigeons and the crows, the obvious birds. But if you look a little bit more closely, there is magic in your own backyard, out your apartment window, in your local park. And aren't we all in need of a little bit more whimsy?
Yeah. Yeah. You talk about, when you're talking about the idea of a spark bird, you say it's this moment. You know, before that happens, birds are invisible to us, and then suddenly they aren't invisible. And I think that's a pretty remarkable observation. You know, and this is true of so many things in life, not just birds, but birds are a great example of it, that you just don't pay any attention to. And then when you start paying attention, it's everywhere. They're everywhere.
They are. They're They're everywhere, and they always have been. So what else haven't we noticed? What wing beats of the Holy Spirit have we not been attentive to? And what people in our lives have we been missing? I was talking to someone who's a pediatrician and a birder, and he said he loves birding because it teaches him attention to detail that then helps him as a doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, a two-year-old can't tell you that it's their pancreas. Yeah. But if I'm noticing the wing bars on a sparrow, suddenly I'm noticing the slight coloration that's changed in the face of a child. And I love that spiritual practice of paying attention to what God has placed in front of us.
Yeah. Speaking of sparrows, I read somewhere recently, and I bet you already know this. I'm sure you do. But that because birds have they can see colors we can't see, that sparrows, when they look at each other, they see all this sort of fabulous. You and I see, actually, the browns are pretty interesting when you look at them. But the birds see more than just browns.
Yeah, they're astonishing. They can hear things we can't hear. They can sense things we can't sense. And, you know, it's that idea that there are forces at play that are so apparent to a sparrow that are not on our radar at all. And those just layers of intrigue in the natural world.
Yeah. The idea of not birds being invisible until they aren't, you know, kind of reminds me of when you learn a new word and then you realize people have been using this word all along. You start seeing it everywhere. I don't know. There's no further point there. That was just
it's kind of like learning a new language. You know, my sons are in a Spanish immersion public school, and my husband and I thought we would learn Spanish along with them, but you can't compete with the brain plasticity of a six-year-old who's getting it for 6 hours a day, you know? So now my middle son, who's 8 years old, will say, oh, you know, there's a word for it in Spanish, but you need about 10 words in English to say the same thing. And to see his eyes opening to these different layers of meaning in the world it reminds me of my birding practice. And there's so much more than meets the eye or the ear once we dig a little deeper.
Yeah. You also pointed out that as you got interested in birds, that gave you a foothold. I don't know if a foothold is the right word, but now suddenly that was an anchoring point to get interested in the rest of the world as well.
It was.
That insight.
Yeah. I've always been more into books than anything else, which often keeps me indoors, but birds have drawn me out. And the thing about birding, you know, I was out looking for this rare Lewis's woodpecker the other day, and there are all these birding message boards and things. And they said, well, it's in the sycamore tree. And I realized I don't know what a sycamore tree looks like. So then I had to learn sycamore trees, and it all builds, you know, what does this bird like to eat? Okay. Where are those bugs located? Okay. I need to know more about the fauna and the flora both. And I've so appreciated that, because I think, you know, I'm 41. There's something about hitting midlife that you kind of can get in this place of stagnation. And that's when birding found me. And there's this new bottomless bowl of delight and interest and whimsy. And there's always more to learn. And what a gift. What a gift.
Yeah. I don't know if you know Russ Ramsey's books about art, but Russ talks about
two on my desk right now.
Oh, good. They're so good. But Russ talks about a teacher that he had in high school who said, the way you get into art is you pick one artist and you learn everything you can about that artist. And before you know it, you start to understand the art world. You realize that this artist was friends with these other three artists and you end up learning about them. And something about that made me think about, I mean, it's exactly what you're saying. You get interested in birds, learn what you can about birds, and then you realize you have to learn about trees, and then you have to learn about, you know, what kind of grasses birds will eat or make nests in or whatever.
Yeah, it is. It's all interconnected. The piece I wasn't prepared for, and I write about this some in the book, is that there is beauty and there is delight and there is that spark, but also the more I travel into the world of birds and birding, the more I'm in touch with grief, because the more you're in touch with the natural world, the more you see all of the ways things are going badly. And you notice that birds are migrating earlier, or you notice that there are fewer, or you notice, you know, and I think that anything we press into and love really deeply also, it risks breaking our heart. But I think that's part of the deep work that we're called to do, is to not shy away from that, to walk deeply into both the hope and the grief that often go hand in hand. So birds are amazing, but birds will also put you in touch with some deep, hard things about the way we have treated and continue to treat the earth.
Yeah, I love the fact that these things you're talking about, I mean, you may have gotten them from books, but you didn't get them all from books.
Yes.
I think it's so important for people who do creative work, people who write. Of course, we have to do a lot of reading, but you're probably gonna read anyway if you're a writer. I love this truth that you got to get outside to have something to write about, to have something to give the writer they couldn't get for themselves, because they can go to the same library you went to read the same books.
Absolutely. And sometimes that's an early morning bird walk, but sometimes that's getting on a bus with 30 strangers to go on a birding tour, which is its own
Oh,
fodder
wow.
for interest. You know,
Oh,
birders
that's a
are
great point.
fascinating people.
Yeah. Tell me about some surprising person you've met birding.
I was recently at the San Diego Birding Festival. Highly recommend. It was wonderful. I could only make it for a day because family life and church life are very full for us right now. But there was a woman on the bus who was 89 years old. And the goal of the tour was to see 100 species of birds. And we stopped at six different locations and we hiked way farther than I thought we would. And she got off that bus 5 out of 6 times. And I
Wow.
thought, you know, when I'm 89, I want to be here with my silly floppy hat and my cane when I need it, still soaking in the delight of creation. She was a wonder.
That's
But these
amazing.
groups of birders, they're so diverse, age and race and gender and political opinions. You know, people are wearing t-shirts that I'm thinking, I do not agree with that t-shirt, but let's look at this warbler together. And birds can be the great unifier. We disagree on 1,000 different things, but if we're all out there interested in looking at the same bird, there's opportunity for connection and conversation. And I love
Yeah.
that about birding.
You're facing the same direction for once.
Yes. And you're both enjoying whatever's right in front of you. And that is wonderful fodder for even those small moments of community.
Yeah. I do want to circle back around to the idea of grief and loss, and hope in that. But I don't want to circle around to it just yet, if you don't mind. I want to talk about this idea that was a really insight that meant a lot to me and helped me understand. I haven't thought about birds nearly as much as you have, but I like birds. And something you said helped me put a finger on what it is that I find so interesting, and that is that you don't have any control over the birds showing up. You can do the best you can to get in position, and they may come or they may not come. And as you say, each bird that enters our gaze is here for a finite amount of time, and you got to be present. You must be present to win, and you must be paying attention. And that temporariness, if I'm sure there's a better noun than that, but that's an essential part of the experience, is the fact that you can pull the book down off the shelf anytime you want to and read it. The bird, not so much.
Yes, it really puts a person in a posture of receiving in a way that I find brings a lot of grace and joy to my life. I've been walking with Jesus since I was 5 years old, but a lot of that was really intentional, really hard striving. I'm going to read the Bible in a year, you know, in junior high. I'm going to put all these prayer lists together and it really kind of burned me out by my 30s. And bird watching has been this opportunity to just sit quietly, but actively and receive from God. And every bird that flies into your field of vision is gift and grace. And you can do things to lure them in. You can put up feeders or you can make silly bird sounds. It's called pishing. But even then, it's all gift and grace. And sometimes the thing you're out there seeking is not the thing that you find. And can you receive that unique gift as what it is, rather than, you know, being frustrated you didn't find the rare, my husband calls them the whoosie whatsits. You didn't find the whoosie whatsit that you were out there looking for. So it really has taught me a lot about the goodness of God and about not trying to make those gifts what I've decided they need to be, but instead receiving the banquet that the Lord has set before me day in and day out.
I saw that movie about bird watching with Jack Black.
Yeah.
The big year or something like that.
Yeah.
It's funny. I sat down and said, this is going to be great. I'm going to get more interested in bird watching from watching this movie. And I actually got less interested because it was not a posture of receiving. And, you know, they're going to go out and conquer the bird world. And they start acting like crazy people. And it was a comedy, of course. But I was like, this is just too sad to be funny to me. Them going out and being so task-oriented in the bird world.
And like anything, we can take it to extremes. And people do, you know, and there is heavy competition. Big news in the birding world this year was that someone finally saw 10,000 different unique birds. There are 11,000 species of birds in the world, but many of them are super, super rare and hard to get to. 10,000, you know, and everyone's like, who's going to now be 10,001, you know? And and we can do that with anything. We can do that with spiritual practices. We can do that with, you know, chocolate is good, but if you eat 20 pounds of it, it's not going to sit well with you. Yeah. And so how can we avoid turning what is beautiful into a consumeristic practice? And I think that is a struggle that a lot of birders face because there is that temptation. Some people call it Pokemon for adults, like you got to catch them all. But to practice, Joan Strossman is a biologist who wrote the book Slow Birding, and to practice slow birding and intentionally, you know, what is right in front of me. And I love going on birding trips, and I love, you know, going out to the marsh that's a couple, you know, miles from our house, but I also need to sit with what's in my actual yard and be grateful for those same house finches that were there yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. You do mention, you know, something that Rowan Williams said, and I don't have it in front of me, but essentially he compares contemplative prayer to bird watching. And he says, you put yourself in a place where something extraordinary might burst into view. And that's not a direct quote. That's the best I could do is a paraphrase. I love that so much. Again, you control what you can control, which is not much, but you do have to be present. Contemplative prayer is not my specialty, but writing is, I really think the same thing happens in creative work. You put yourself in the place where something extraordinary might flip by and I might get a glimpse of it. So I wouldn't be surprised if you have some thoughts on this as a person who's both a writer and a bird watcher and a prayer. Yeah.
Yes. That you can create good conditions.
Yeah.
You can, and when those good conditions are there, good things are more likely to happen. I would never see a bird if I didn't leave my house and I kept all the curtains drawn. And opening the curtains or going out into the yard doesn't ensure I see something, but it makes it much more likely. And I think the same is true of the writing life. If I have a little bit of quiet and I've got my pen and paper or I've got my computer and I have some inspiration, the likelihood is that the writing will happen. But if I'm, you know, not going to give myself that gift of time and space, it's hard for it to happen. And the same is true with prayer. You know, I am not a morning person. All of my young kids that wake up at the crack of dawn have tried to turn me into a morning person. And I'm not there. And I tried to fit myself in that box for spiritual practices for so long. That's what holy people do. They get up early and pray. It was not good for me. So instead, what are the right conditions? And for me, that's often a walk in the middle of the day. That is when I pray best. So to create those conditions where I'm available to the Lord and I'm looking and my eyes are open, and I'm ready to receive, I think is true of birding and writing and prayer. And they've really all three influenced one another. Birding is by far my favorite and deepest spiritual practice because it is not forced. It is gift and grace. And so is writing, but you have to show up.
Yeah. Help me, I think I know what you mean when you call birding a spiritual practice, but can you maybe flesh it out a little bit, birding as spiritual practice?
For sure. So it's very connected to the idea of contemplative prayer, where you're seeking to hear and listen and receive from God. It teaches the practices of awareness and being present. It is very, very hard to bird if you're constantly on your phone. Yeah. So you have to be there in the moment with your ears open, with your eyes open, with your heart open. And what happens when we're still in that way is the Holy Spirit will often kind of raise some things to the surface in our hearts and our souls. Like this, mm-hmm. you know, this is a person you're not at peace with, or often the one that surprises me is, Courtney, I really love you. And I'm like, really? I don't expect that word of grace. But being in that place where we're quiet enough and attentive to enough to the things outside of us often also allows us to be attentive to the things inside of us mm-hmm. that get swept away in the busyness of life. I often lead a Lenten practice on social media and at my church that we call a bird from the Lord. Okay. And the encouragement is just go outside for 10 minutes and look for birds and see what happens. See what happens outside of you. See what happens inside of you. And often I'll have people say, you know, Courtney, it was the day I didn't see any birds that I really heard from the Lord. Or it's the day where I saw a brand new bird that I felt really seen by the Lord. And one congregant texted me, I saw a crow eating a Del Taco wrapper. What does that mean? I'm like, well, you know, it's not like an omen. But it's one of those things that really centers us in our bodies as well. We spend so much time kind of up in our minds that mm-hmm. to sit there, you'll feel the breeze, you'll feel the sun, you know, you'll find the bugs if they're out there for better or for worse. And I think before our modern era, this is what many Christians did, just part of their daily life. You pay attention to the birds because they're going to affect your crops. You pay attention mm-hmm. to the weather because it matters for the growing season. And they may not have even called it prayer. It was just part of living, but mm-hmm. we've lost it and we can recover it.
Yeah, that's so good. Okay. So you remark at one point that birds are a unique avenue into an understanding of hope. You've started talking about this a little bit, but I'd like to hear you say more about what you mean by that. Birds as an avenue to hope.
Birding as a practice, as a hobby, exploded in popularity during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It was one of the safe things people could still do. So sales of bird seed and bird feeders and bird field guides and binoculars all just went off the charts, and it hasn't really slowed down. And I think people are discovering there is just goodness in the very, very simple practice of looking up, mm-hmm. of being outside, of realizing that when the world is on fire, the birds are still doing the thing the birds do. Margaret Rankle has a beautiful new book out called The Comfort of Crows. And I'm going to paraphrase here, but she has a section where she says, you know, the world is on fire and there's no time to put down the water buckets. Put down the water buckets anyway. Mm-hmm. For just a few moments, learn from the bluebirds who have no hope for the future, but build for the future nevertheless. And I think about that quote almost every day, that the birds remind us that ultimately the work is the Lord's and what we are tasked with is what's right in front of us. That all faith is local, that all neighborliness is local in a way. Mm-hmm. So many, many folks I talk to, I have a little birding podcast in part so I can talk to other people than my husband about birds. but they got into birds during a time of really deep grief. And it was that desire for hope, that desire to realize the world goes on even after a trauma or a death or a pandemic. And it's true for so many people, or their own cancer diagnosis was what drove them out to the trails. That birds remind us that things go on.
Yeah. Yeah. You quote Wendell Berry on the need to be joyful, even though we've considered all the facts.
Yes. Yes. And the birds do that. You know, I remember thinking one day during the pandemic when everything was shut down and everything looked so scary and we were all going to die in the next 20 minutes, there were still house finches nesting in our yard, you know, and they were unperturbed. And their house got knocked down in a really strong wind and they kind of looked around and looked at each other and then they just built a new nest. Yeah. And there's so much hope in that just microcosm of the kingdom of God still being built twig by twig after a strong wind.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Okay. The Black Phoebe was your spark bird. What birds are you excited about right now?
Oh my goodness, how much time do you have? It's migration season. So I think birders shouldn't have to go to work for about a month in the spring. It's only fair. We should just be able to be outside all day, every day. So we have a lot of warblers coming through Southern California now, which is really exciting. If you live anywhere in the middle of the country, there's this huge Mississippi flyway that you will see millions of birds. Most birds migrate in the dead of night. I did not know that before becoming a bird. They use celestial navigation and they migrate in the dead of night. So winging it their way over your head in April, in May, are thousands or even millions of birds every night, which just—
I did not know that.
Right? It's mind-blowing. Albatrosses light me up. Our family budget does not extend to whimsical trips to Antarctica, but maybe someday. And my very, very favorite bird is the song sparrow, which is not that interesting to look at, except to other song sparrows that can see the colors. It's smaller and browner. But I love song sparrows because they're very common. They stay put and they sing no matter what the weather is doing. And I just find, as a writer, as a pastor, I find inspiration in wanting to be someone who sings even amidst the storm.
Yeah. I love herons.
Yes.
They seem so spectacular. They seem like they should be rare. And they're just not. They're everywhere.
They're like dinosaurs.
Yeah. And I just think it seems like such a grace and such a mercy that these things are everywhere instead of being just, instead of being rare, they're about as common as, say, possums.
Yeah.
And yet I still get a thrill every time I see one.
Right. And for what reason, other than God loves us and wants to remind us that beauty and grace are, it's an Andy Dillard quote, but beauty and grace, acts of beauty and grace are performed whether or not we will or sense them. Mm. The least we can do is try and be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, a raccoon, if you'd never seen or heard of a raccoon and somebody described one, you'd say that can't be possible. There's no way there's a little creature that has a bandit mask and he acts like a bandit. You're just making that up. That sounds like
and washes his food.
Yeah, washes his food. Yeah. And yet there they are, these most very common creatures, if you live in North America at least. And although I think they also live in Finland. I think some got introduced in Finland. They loved Finland. They're having a great time over there.
That's fascinating. I'm going to look that up. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, look up the Finnish raccoons. All right. I want to keep talking about birds, but we probably ought to just sort of maybe, well, tell me about your, I do want to hear about your podcast. Tell me about your podcast real quick before I ask my last question, which I didn't give you any fair warning on, but it's okay.
Oh, danger. The podcast is about birds and hope. And about half of my guests are people of faith who are hobby birders. Uh-huh. And there are so many people of faith who are hobby birders. I didn't know Fernando Ortega is a birder and Patsy Claremont is a birder and Kay Warren is a birder. And the other half are scientific birding experts. So we talk to ornithologists and naturalists and get the lowdown on what's really going on in the birding world. My most recent guest was Dan Baldessari, who is a professor at SUNY Oswego. Okay. And he did a segment on what are the most metal birds. So what are the most hardcore kind of birds? And it was so interesting and I learned so much. So
the cassowary surely won that prize.
It did not make the list, but it maybe should have. We'll have to do part two. Yeah. But it's been very fun and many grief stories woven into that podcast that I sent out a little questionnaire to the guests and I don't get those grief stories, but then middle of the podcast, those start to come out. And, and that's a big part of looking up as well. The story of the death of my grandfather is woven in and his influence on me and my birding life. So it's a lot of fun. It's under an hour and it's good for birders or people of faith or people looking for a little hope.
And what's the name of that podcast?
The Thing with Feathers.
Okay.
Borrowed from Emily Dickinson. She's in the public domain. I'm allowed.
Okay. I wasn't going to turn you in. Do you have a position on whether or not the ivory-billed woodpecker will ever be seen again?
Oh gosh, this side of the eschaton. I think we will see the ivory-billed woodpecker in the new heavens and the new earth.
Okay,
but we need to
wait for that. Okay.
Yeah, not because I wouldn't love to, but I think facts point in a certain direction. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The question I typically end with that I didn't give any warning on is who are the writers who make you want to write?
Oh my goodness. I just came back from Calvin University's Festival of Faith and Writing.
And that.
Like every single writer I met. Oh, it was amazing. Every poet I met, you know, I think especially fiction writers and poets, because I don't do that.
Yeah.
So there's no competition. There's just pure enjoyment.
Yeah.
But when I think about looking up and the writers that really inspired it, it is people like Wendell Berry and Rowan Williams, Madeline L'Engle, Annie Dillard, mm-hmm. these people who have always had one foot in the natural world and one foot in the writing world really, really inspire me. Margaret Rinkle, Ross Gay, who has the book, The Book of Delights, which is not really about birds, but it's about delight. So it's kind of about birds. I love those writers that are working to write things that are not prescriptive. These are not 10 steps to be a better Christian. These are descriptive. Look at the wonders that God has wrought. Yeah. And those are the writers that really, you know, at one point reading Margaret Rinkle's book, I threw it across the room and my husband said, "We don't do that with our books. What's wrong with you?" And I've said, I've never read a sentence crafted that beautifully. And it makes me angry because I don't know that I'll ever be able to write like that. And he's like, "Okay, pick the book back up. We'll keep working." Those are the writers that really light me up.
Yeah. Yeah. Every writer who's making beautiful things is your ally.
Yes, exactly. And so generous and so kind. But have you ever had a sentence just make you mad? Because gosh, how did she do that? It's a magic trick.
Well, Margaret Rinkle, she does do magic tricks.
She does.
And she's a Nashvillian, as you probably know.
Yes. She came on the Thing with Feathers podcast. She's a very gracious person.
Yeah. Oh, good.
I told her I threw her book. She was fine with it.
Well, good. Well, Courtney, thanks for being here. It's been so fun to have you. And I hope you see that woodpecker, that ivory billed woodpecker.
Me too. We'll go find it. We'll go find it in the new earth. Thank you for the gift of being with you today.
It's been a pleasure. The Habit Podcast is brought to you by The Rabbit Room, where art nourishes community and community nourishes art. You can support their work, including this podcast, by becoming a member. Visit rabbitroom.com/membership. Special thanks as well to Taylor Leonard for letting us use her song Diamonds as the theme music for the Habit Podcast. You can learn more about Taylor and follow her work at taylorleonard.com. The Habit membership is a library of resources for writers by me, Jonathan Rogers. More importantly, The Habit is a hub of community where like-minded writers gather to discuss their work and give each other a little more courage. Find out more at thehabit.co.